All right.
That was a cold
open. Oh, we can hear us. You can hear me? Everyone can hear me on Spaces or what?
Yeah, I don't think the music
played. Yeah, no, I hear it.
I don't think the Twitter music played, but it was playing on YouTube.
All right, the music didn't play. It played in our heads, an ode to the beautiful Rec Radio intro song. We got a little bit of a production change, so we got some clunkiness, as always, to go with the Rec Radio beginnings. We like to keep it with a little bit of technical difficulties out here. So just to keep our character and keep us humble. Mando, why don't you introduce our sponsor and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, so we are sponsored today by Rollbit. Obviously, they are pretty well-known crypto casino right now, the best. They sponsor the show. They sponsor me and KPM for various things as well. You can do anything there. Degen trading, casino, sports betting. They've upgraded everything. Go check it out. It's a great platform. So I think that's it. We haven't got OSF today to do the codes, right? Let me just look at where.
No OSF, but I got the codes if you want them. If people are ready.
Yeah, why don't you go with the first code?
First code is going to be CBS Rect 25. CBS Rect 25, and that's shown right now on YouTube. If you want to watch us live, we're on YouTube, and we're also going to be doing Twitter live video today. The audience is a little fragmented because I'm running the spaces through my account. Run the video through a Rec Radio account. Then we're running YouTube on the YouTube account. But we're going to clean that up next week and have those all congealed into one solid audience. Actually, I'm lying. It's going to be two because it's YouTube and Twitter Spaces. But you get it. Anyway, this is episode 44. We're back after a week break. It was a long week. I mean, I don't know what's happened in the market. I've kind of been trying to stay away from it. I took a little vacation.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I know it's down. I didn't short it, and I'm upset with myself. Oh, yeah, and also we got a cold-blooded shill out here. I guess I didn't even introduce our guest. He's sitting up here with us, so we're happy to have him here. Man. How you doing, CBS?
Thank you very much. Yeah, good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We're missing OSF, but we gained another Brit. It seems like you're
outnumbered. Yeah, no, I'm outnumbered. I mean, like,
at all times.
Soccer, football, we had a little debate before the show. Turns out they won this time around. But,
Yeah,
so I guess let's get to the market a little bit. We're down today. There was a hot CPI this morning. I think stocks went up. I honestly have been disconnected. So maybe why don't you give me a little insight of what you guys are doing out there?
It's horrific. All the coins look horrific. And they have done, particularly ETH, man. Someone just took ETH out to a week and just shot it. It has not been a good period for altcoins or ETH. Today was a little bit of a respite, it looks like. But it's...
Isn't it down only today?
Well, the ETH Bitcoin ratio was slightly.
Oh, yeah.
it's been pretty horrific out there, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Everything was up, gold up, stocks up, bond yields down. I love how you're smiling every single time that this.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know.
It's all about yourself.
Who could have seen this coming? Even though I didn't trade it, so I'm like worthless anyway. What do you think?
You're not going to do this again, right? You're not going to call it and then not be there.
Oh, no, that's all I do. I call it. I fuck up the trade by over-trading it or taking too much size. And then instead, I take the money and lose it in like online poker or somewhere else like an idiot. I'm a true idiot, it appears. I don't know. I'm trying to fix myself. I'm you know, do we need to go into this? Do you want to be my psychologist? I need some self-help.
I feel like... Already you've downgraded from what was a really nice house in the Hamptons to I don't know where the hell you are right now, but
oh yeah. it's not the house out there, that's for sure. I'm traveling again. Thanks a lot, man. Oh geez. Anyway, CBS, what are your thoughts on the market today?
Yeah, pretty much echoing that, just trash can shit basically. Like it's BTC, I think, was probably the most surprising today that it actually kind of was weak overnight. So when I woke up this morning, it was like actually, you know, more impacted than some other markets. And then throughout the course of today, everything else just kind of catching up with that. Equities still kind of doing all right, and the dollar in like a really precarious position for anybody that's bullish on risk. Like this is the area that the dollar could kind of take off for the next legs higher. So I think we've probably got like a really important next few days in terms of kind of, you know, seeing which of those markets is going to take the lead, because despite being bearish and, you know, continually hammering home the, you know, the bearish outcomes. You know, the indexes can still kind of paint a pretty picture as long as the dollar fails. But I think over the next few days, we'll probably get a few more answers.
Yeah. I mean, dollar's kind of close to double topping a little bit, right? So maybe there will be some respite there.
Dude, I'm so happy when the dollar goes up. Like,
it goes up.
Yeah, the life hack of living in Europe even though it's in crypto, just even having some dollar income streams is just, it's just insane. I feel like, did you see that chart of all the different currencies versus the dollar over like the last year, 5 years? It has just been horrific for everything that wasn't the dollar. I don't know. Like, I know it was a bit toppy, but I'm just long-term bullish the dollar. Everything is shit, but the dollar just seems to be slightly better version of shit than everything else.
Yeah, I think dollar rips. And like, I was in the same position as you in terms of like that conversion. I remember like when the dollar was on its absolute rampage up to the highs. And I remember doing the conversion to fiat and being like, holy shit, like this is what the conversion is for me now. It's like into pounds, it was suddenly like, damn, this is great. So I think pretty much like the best trade over that period was just holding stable coins and then converting into pounds here. And it was, you know, suddenly just a money maker over that period.
Yeah, man. Like, it's a dream move. Unlike for UK, you got to move, KBM. You got to move.
I mean, I hold a lot of dollars, don't I? Isn't that good for me? And I'll just go to your towns and just buy all the shit.
Yeah, that's what you should do. I would just do some Larry Europe trips. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe I need to move to Europe soon. Who knows?
Also, not like Western Europe. Like the ones that aren't in the euro, like hit like Turkey, maybe even Russia, you know, just go check out.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I took that trip to Tokyo, I was like shocked at how cheap everything was already. Like,
yeah, exactly, right? Like, yen as well.
Well, I guess that's good. I don't really know if it's good in the long term for everyone, but good right now.
Doesn't really feel like something that you ever really care.
what, long-term stuff? I'm trying, man. Geez, really, really going deep on me here. These are things I'm thinking about. Short term, long term, life goals.
Yeah. One day.
Yeah, no, I have to. I mean, like,
so what's going wrong? I feel like every few months you go through this period of like self reflection.
Yeah, well, when you take a lot of leverage and fuck up, you just have these times when you're like, maybe I shouldn't have done that and thought of it a little bit longer term, you know? I think we've talked about it a lot in our trading shows on how to stay disciplined and like the perils of like, you know, over trading or undisciplinedness, you know, normal people shit that you don't have to worry about, Mando, since you're collecting your dollars and selling apes and sitting long term, like
apes for dollars, man. Ape for dollars for euros is the real trade.
Yeah. CBS, so CBS, what's your thoughts on discipline and what stuff like that? I mean, like, how do you teach someone to start there?
It's always like a really difficult thing. And I think you're probably a good example of it, right? It's like the majority of people that I speak to and anybody that I've taken through like kind of mentoring, the simple answer is you always know what the right thing to do is. It's actually doing it, right? So like everybody knows when they overtrade, they know when like the position size is too big. And so it's really difficult to try and implement the like the physical process of stopping and not completing that action, because everybody is self-aware usually enough to do, you know, to understand what's happening when it comes to lack of discipline. But it's really fucking difficult to actually stop it, you know, and at an early stage, you know, it's fine to look back and, you know, kind of we work on spotting the signs earlier and earlier. So when you get into that little like patch of overtrading and suddenly like 3 days has gone past and you've just been like hitting trades relentlessly, and suddenly you have this like moments of clarity where you're like, holy shit, what have I been doing? Like I've been in like the pits, just like hitting buttons. And like, it just, you know, you have that realization moment. So it's like, I always work with people on like, how can you spot it sooner and like sooner and sooner and trying to just bring it in. Because otherwise, as I said, you just kind of, you go through these periods. And like the thing that always gets to me about discipline is always this moment of clarity on the other side where you say to yourself, I'm changed. I'm not going to do that again. Fuck, that was an expensive lesson. 3 months later, you nothing matters anymore apart from 48 hours straight at a PC hitting buttons. And like, you're a changed man from back then, you know. It's just like a complete, you just go straight back into the same shit on a cycle every 2 months, lose a ton of money. You're a changed man. You're reborn again. Same shit. It's just, it's a very difficult process to kill the lack of discipline. But everybody usually knows the answer. Like, they know they're doing it. It's the discipline and the self-control to, you know, put an end to it.
You're making me sound like an addict here.
Well, I think he said 3 months. I mean, he said 3 months down the line. It's really like 3 hours, really.
Yeah, is that it? Is that what you got?
I had no lever trades on today. I woke up, I was like, you know, I feel really clean, like nothing to really worry about. And then as soon as Bitcoin starts moving against ETH, I was like, right, here we go. I'm going to put on a Bitcoin ETH trade. And before I know it, I've got some like 2.5 million by 2.5 million Bitcoin ETH lever trade on. I'm just like, how did I get myself here? Like, how? I just kept clicking the buttons. And I was like, oh, I can't move. And I just need to, I don't know. Now, I even think the good trade's a good trade right now. But then I'm sitting here going like, I'm probably going to have to stay up till like 2 a.m., making sure that this doesn't move against me. And
I used to speak to people about like the way that I used to talk about like the death spiral of accounts. So like, if you guys have had like, you know, smaller accounts when you were starting out, and you would get into that process of like wanting to hit the trade and then like revenge trading. And what you usually find is you've got like a $10,000 account and you lose $1,000, and you think that's fine. You kind of rationalize it. You lose a few more thousand, you rationalize it. That's fine. And then you start saying things like, okay, look, if I drop below 5,000, I'm going to stop. I'm going to pull the money out and say enough's enough. And then like, you get a little bit lower and like, you're like, oh, you know, keep going. So like, you keep on kind of setting these moving boundaries that, you know, allow you to go to the next level. But I always say, for the majority of people that like enter that spiral, not that you're doing it right now, Mando, at all, but when you start to get into that process, you like act on autopilot. Like, you just do it. You just click the buttons. Like, you just arrive at the PC, load out your phone, whatever, and you just push the buttons. Like, and even people that are losing money, they just wake up the next day and they're just suddenly transported into clicking buttons. And it's like completely autopilot. It's like an out-of-body experience. You've just hit six positions at once. You don't know what the fuck's happened. And then you're like, 2 hours later, how did I get here? You know, it's like you kind of zone out from it.
I feel like we're doing an Elliott Rowe session now. You guys sound the same too. But I don't but I feel that completely. It's like, I think a lot of times lately, I'll just come in a day prepared to like chill, going to take it easy, be disciplined. And then like all of a sudden, like you're saying, that out of body experience where I'm like, oh, click clack, I'm fucking down 100K.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm 5 million deep on shorts now because a 5-minute candle impulse, like $12 down. So now I'm all in now.
Yeah, it's like I just turned this trade in from a scalp into a long-term lifetime investment.
Yeah, so. A full macroeconomic shift now has got to unfold. So yeah,
you had a bad day though midweek. I had a bad day midweek. I was listening to OSF. We went to some random art gallery because Obi was showing his art there, and then during the session, I just get liquidated on a decent clip, and I was like, "Fuck," you know, I wasn't paying attention. And then you said you missed a flight. You ended up trading,
that was unbelievable. My idiot buddy didn't renew his passport. Told me the day of, missed the flight. Ended up trading, taking a huge loss. Still went on the trip. Trip was chaotic and horrible. Yeah, it's been a bad stretch, but we're gonna turn that around today with some advice from CBS. That was some pretty good advice already. Like, what? I guess we should get into your background a little bit and like how you started trading, what you do as a trader, you teach traders, etc. If you want to share all that with us.
Yeah, so I'll slim it down as much as I possibly can. So I started running an educational content creation company. So I used to create education packages for major corporate clients, and that was my background. So I basically always been involved in the creation of educational content. I think it's 5 years this year that I've been trading full time. And so I kind of basically, I started to get into trading about 10 years ago. It was basically just another form of betting at the time. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I just kind of hit buttons, hope for the best, and then kind of started to get kind of addicted to the trying to understand, like, how do people make sense of the markets in order to make profit? Because people do. So therefore, there is something that I can learn here and dig out that means that I can be in the same position. And I think I started off in the traditional markets because for me, the kind of the image of the successful stock trader was always like, that's the one, right? It's like, you know, Wall Street in your suit, enjoying the good life. Like, that's the kind of the image presented. Like, the reality now is, like, you know, sweatpants and like pajamas all day and just sitting here, like, that's it. But, you know, I started on the traditional side of things and really kind of like dived into crypto like 2018, 19. I was a big player of Team Fortress, which was one of the first games that I kind of got into with a cryptocurrency kind of payment system for the economy there. So I kind of had my first introduction through gaming and then kind of dived into it a little bit more with some eyes on trading. And as it stands, I trade a relatively decent mix. As it for 2023, I've been very much heavily on equities. My performance in crypto has been abysmal because of the way that I trade now. It really kind of has been a punishing crypto year for me. It just does not fit my system at all. Whereas equities have been a lot more forgiving. So I was previously a scalper. Like, I would scalp the Dow, I would scalp ETH, I scalped ETH for a year basically on a tick time frame. So I was just, you know, hitting buttons. I then transitioned to becoming a swing trader because I had a baby. I wanted to free up some more time. I didn't necessarily need to scalp as kind of often as I was. So I transitioned into swing trading. And that's been
just to go into it. Like, stuff, or is it just like, or is it you're looking at technical indicators? Like, how you doing it?
Yeah, so tick Renko charts. So a lot of people will know me for Renko charts. Very clean chart presentation form. Not very many people use it. A huge amount of people can benefit from using it. But tick Renko charts. So basically just live price and I play off divergences. So slowdowns in momentum intraday. I'm looking for catching those little kind of micro tops and bottoms throughout the course of a day. And then just scalping opposite direction because everything's counter trend with
type of style. Did you start at a prop firm in traditional markets?
Nope. Completely self-taught, self-done. So it was all just kind of my work there. I don't know if I fit into anything like that. I'm a really shit employee from my time that I was employed. I'm not a good person to try and manage. So
to be clear, this looks like the most stressful form of trading I can possibly
drop. Oh, tick and scalp trading? Yeah, no, it's like
scalp trading on a tick Renko chart. Like, that just seems unbelievably
that's my
stressful.
Bread and butter too. I mean, it's that's the trenches, bro. You got to get out now. Like CBS said, it's a bit stressful. You don't want to do that your whole life.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I feel like I serve my time. I hit my time with that. And yeah, this year for like swing trading and like big directional trades in crypto has been very challenging. Like, and it's not, the market's trended up, which has been the most kind of infuriating thing. Like, if you look at 2023 and you look like we're up, but the aggression in terms of the snapbacks on the selling, the chop in between, like, it's basically just caused havoc with the system that I usually operate on, which, you know, is relatively friendly in equities, far cleaner trending market, far more forgiving. It's worked out, you know, fantastically well. So as I said, just the conditions and that level of like volatility and aggression and, you know, shit like when BTC is making a push on the hourly and then it fully retraces it the next day and then it fully retraces the retrace the following day. Like, it's like I can't catch that directional position I want as, you know, as easily as I have done before.
Yeah, that's like all liquidity games out there now. You're really seeing that there's no fundamentals to drive this thing. It's just people mostly positioning liquidity based. Spikes up, spikes down. So
I said this to you the other day, KBM, but like now we have all these LLMs, these ChatGPT stuff. Do you think like we're just not good enough? Like this sort of stuff, should we just give it to a bot to just do? Like, or do you really think there's going to be an edge, like a human edge to do this?
You asking me?
I'm asking you both, I guess.
I mean, like, the scalper already fights algos all goddamn day. I've been in the trenches against the Terminator for 15 years of trading. So I'll fight the bots. I'm still going. Live hands.
What do you think?
Yes. I mean, obviously, the edges are so much smaller constantly, and the trades get harder. But, I mean, there's always going to be a human element to it. It works better in traditional markets as well, when you can dissect news and information and put a human twist on it and play momentum and volume that way. Whereas crypto, it kind of does feel very algo liquidity driven. So I don't know.
I think right now it's probably, you know, I think based on what we're currently experiencing with crypto in terms of lower volume, you know, and just the markets moving with greater ease, then I think it's a harder human traded market. Whereas I think when you've got a kind of like a nice, clean, packed volume books and everything is a little bit more forgiving, then I think it's a little bit easier. So I think, you know, conditions now probably determine that actually, you know, I know a lot of people are, you know, still doing well this year. I think the majority of people have probably had a rough 2023 trying to actively trade the markets. And when it comes to future, I mean, yeah, I think there's always going to be a human place. But I think that, you know, kind of the AI side of things grows exponentially, especially with, you know, some of the options that people have for customization and those people who maybe have had an idea for something before and now with the help of AI can actually bring it to life. Like there's a lot more competition in that space as well. So.
Yeah. I think I saw that the NASDAQ's now allowed like AI orders. I can just imagine that just becoming the trend. Like it really just becomes.
What does that mean?
Well, I just think it means to be a scalper now is just insane. I think the real value is probably in catching fundamental trends or like swing trading more than it is like day trading. I just feel like these bots are going to be able to do it quicker and be able to assess things far more things than we're even able to. Like they'll be able to check order books, any technical indicators, all like charts all at the same time. And you're going to be trading against them all day. I just feel like I just felt like when I saw all that stuff, I was like, maybe you should just give like 10 grand to one of these algo bots. There are a few of them in crypto already. I was looking around. I think three commas, is it? Three commas do some, but like maybe they changed it. And then there's this one other. But I can see this becoming huge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We already saw the bots a couple of years ago, right? I mean, they weren't AI based, but they'll get arbed out pretty quickly in the scalpers arena. I don't know. It's tough to say. I think the AI bots are probably even better for long-term stuff.
You think? Yeah. I mean, they might be better for everything. Because
they're like prediction-based. Like, bro, I don't know what I'm talking about. So let's let's just move on from there. But somebody might
just
know.
Submit to the AI. That's all you got to do. Just submit to the AI. Just be like, yeah.
So can I ask CBS, are you a crypto believer or are you just a chart guy? Like, were you ever involved in crypto or did you just kind of fall into it because it was a liquid trading market?
Oh God, that's a good question. I always feel like I'm going to like offend people with the answer, but, I believe in certain aspects and certain kind of, you know, fundamental values of crypto. I still think that they are probably the most fun, dynamic, volatile markets in history to trade and be a part of. So I kind of feel blessed to be able to, you know, be a part of the crypto movement and whatever form that takes, and I've had the ability to trade the markets. I think I'm probably not going against the grain here when I say this space is packed with tons of shit that needs to be eradicated, you know, and will be eradicated. So I think, you know, in terms of like the majors and BTC and ETH in terms of future use case and adoption, yes, like fully on board and behind. When it comes to kind of everything else, I think fantastic trading markets, would I have my life savings in them? No. Right. Like it's.
Yeah. I mean, have they failed a ton of narratives, especially with this last run up when no institutions really bought? I mean, like, really, have they not failed a ton of narratives? I mean, it feels to me like they have.
I put out a tweet, I think it was 2 days ago, which I didn't even think was that bearish, but like people really, really took it as bearish. It was that I don't think next year is going to be this like insane run.
No, it's not going to be. I mean, you know how many like people, I don't know. There's just no way.
I think we need time. Like, I do think that applications will come. Like, if you take a step back, crypto is a 1 trillion market. Global assets is a 400 trillion, including all property, everything. If you can start putting some of those assets actually on chain and you just have a new realm for trading of all assets, I think that's huge.
Does that create value for ETH or Bitcoin? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, number of transactions normally means value to stakers, right? So what you can use a blockchain for, like take a step back, like why would you ever use a blockchain? Is it just a speculation? I do think that you need ledgers for like trading stuff. Like it is useful for having that sort of stuff. So if you move some of that on chain, it can be big. But I think we're a while away from that. Like there was some stuff today that like BlackRock and JP Morgan, I think put some of that, like BlackRock, maybe JP Morgan put some of BlackRock's shares on a blockchain, and I think Barclays then accepted it as collateral or something really random. But I still think like you need lots of regulation, and you need the rails so that TradFi can actually trade on these actually systems. But if you just get one asset, right? If you just get, I don't know, like let's say you got the US high yield bond market, that's about $2 trillion. Like you just get one of those markets. And it doesn't have to be that. It could be commodities. It could be oil. It could be anything. You know, like it's just how small crypto is. You just need one of these markets to kind of move on chain, or at least partly on chain. And I think it can change stuff. But for now, it's just there's a lot of vacuous vaporware, right? Like it's and I don't think the applications have failed. It's like the long term value of crypto is still there. It's just that the actual products that we came up with, they were just pure speculation rather than a large amount of speculation.
I don't know.
I think that's like a big problem. In terms of like how much we've created in the space, because for me, the period of NFT bullishness, I think is one of the best normie attention drives that we've ever had in the crypto space. Like, and that feeling of kind of onboarding so many fresh people with like an idea and a concept, and you know, sure, they may not have been able to perfectly describe what an NFT is, but there was an appreciation there for what it was, and we got people using the technology, and we got people on, and like that is exciting. And of course the downside with crypto is that every time that we have those kind of, you know, wonderful movements and advancements, we've created a ton of shit by doing so. And people don't remember the great things that came out of those periods. They just remember all of the scams and the money losses and the, you know, the poor performing markets. And so it's like, it's unfortunate we create so much shit during those great periods, and people, especially Normies Association, is now loss of money, scam, rug pull, you know, like the positives are lost, but there is still a lot of positives that we've experienced. And as I said, the NFT drive was like a huge one for me personally, in, you know, kind of where we push things.
Yeah. But they all also got completely rinsed. So I don't know when they're going to come back. Right. So,
yeah. Like, yeah. That's what I mean.
One step forward, three steps back, or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
NFTs can be real things, you know, and they can be
great, but where's the value?
So I think this is kind of the point I'm getting at. I think that you won't you won't get to fool me twice about like just come on for a meme or like this is going to be like be in it for the pump, right? Mm-hmm. I think people are only going to come back by what you just said, CBS, which is there's actually something tangible. It's like, right, oh, I can get a loan on my Rolex, or you know, I can get a loan on my house, or I could trade various, I could train like a trade a wine portfolio, or like I can get exposure to tons of different things via this. And that hasn't happened yet. I think when that stuff happens, the conversations that we have, we don't have to explain what the technology is. Like at the moment, we kind of, we created the technology and then had to kind of invent the use cases. And oftentimes like the use cases were also like an invention. It's like, right, with DeFi, you get this special coin. Well, what does that coin do? Well, it gets you another coin. It's like, it's just, yeah. I feel like when that isn't like that, we can move on, but I don't think that's coming in 2024. I think we get ETFs and we get halvings, but I don't think that's like a blow off top. I think you for the blow off top, you need those applications.
Yeah. What if it's not even ETH or Bitcoin that, you know, facilitate all these, and these, like, it could easily be a new technology. It probably will be, realistically. Why does that be ETH? That's another topic.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So Bitcoin, I think, is like,
just kidding. I don't
want to keep on that. Bitcoin's digital gold, so it has its own thing. But yeah, ETH's got I think there's network effects building that's happened, right? Like, you don't, if everyone's there, I think it gets to a, you know, it gets a sustainable level, and then it's just useful for everyone to be on the same thing. Just like the, like some of these internet protocols, it just makes sense. So I think people are hoping that that's what happens. But look, Solidity, people argue, is not as good a coding language as like some of the others used. So I forget, like maybe Rust is used for some of them. And so maybe people have said like, it would be easier if we had a different coding language. People then try and back engineer like how to get that onto ETH and all this sort of stuff. But yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to hope that people start using it for real stuff before it becomes outdated tech.
Yeah. I mean, anything can happen, right? That's why you don't want to lever your whole portfolio to one thing. So to transition to that, how do you manage risk, CBS, when you're teaching traders? What are your portfolio allocations? Like, how do you keep all that in check so you don't fall into one of those discipline spirals where you're suddenly clicking buttons, chasing some pennies that you lost, or millions,
yep,
or who the hell knows, yep, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So when it comes to risk, I think the most important thing, so I'm a technical trader, so my decisions are based purely off the technicals. I'm a big believer in that, you know, anything that is news related, fundamental, I should receive a signal from the chart that should give me a position that I can take prior to any event that then unfolds. So I'm a big believer that kind of the TA guides all of my decision making, because it's the most accountable form of kind of investing and trading that I can do, because I've got something to kind of benchmark myself against in terms of performance. But one of the big things that is important with risk, and kind of a lot of people overlook, is they think about risk in terms of like the classic advice of, you know, risk 1% per trade, risk 2% per trade. And it's actually like it's a garbage take, really, because what we want to do is, when we feel confident about the position that we're entering, if we've got, for example, you know, three separate pieces of confluence around the analysis we've completed, we want to make sure that our risk allocation is greater for a position like that. If we're taking something that just has a, you know, two items of confluence, then we shouldn't be risking the same as something that has three. Right, we should be ensuring that our risk slides up with us as well as back down on kind of the riskier plays. So I think that's probably one of the kind of big things that people tend to overlook, is that, you know, they kind of get protective and think that growth needs to be about 1 or 2% risk, whereas actually you need to be in a position to hit the accelerator when the setup kind of aligns for you, because that's the way you start to break the back of accounts. You know, that's the way you grow, is by ensuring that you have the appropriate level. Because there's nothing worse, you know, as traders, we all sit back, and when we hit a good trade, usually one of the first thoughts, especially for newer traders, is, I knew that was coming, I wish I put more size on it. Like, the first thing you do is critique the position you've just taken, even though it's a winner, by wishing that you put more on the position because you were confident in it, I mean, whatever the situation. So, you know, that's kind of my big thing with risk is slide it up. You know, basically, don't be a pussy. If you have reason to do it, you need to be aggressive with risk, you know, as well as, you know, trying to be protective.
So run through that a little bit. So you're saying that if you really like a trade, be as big that you're uncomfortable about it.
Yeah. So like if you're looking at a position, like for example, me, I use the Awesome Oscillator and I use RSI. And then I use price action signals like support and resistance. So they're kind of like the classic, but that's my kind of triple threat. So let's say, for example, that I've got a bullish divergence on both the Awesome Oscillator and RSI, and it's into a major support level. So I've got three pieces of confluence there for why I would want to be on the long side of this position, let's say. That for me would equate to a higher risk position than if I just had like a naked bull div. So I might have a bull div that appears halfway towards support, but we're not sat at that important support level. So I don't have the same level of confluence that I do when I've kind of got that triple threat, in which case I can assign more risk and be happier in that position. So it really, to me, I always grade my setups in terms of like A, B, and C. And then you put your C grade setups, you might choose to risk 1 or 2%. Your B grade, you might choose 3%. Your A grade, you're looking at 5%, right? You want to hammer those ones that, again, statistically, and you should have the backing to support you in this. It's not just kind of, you know, picking something and saying, yes, this is a 5% trade. You need something on paper that says this is a successful setup. And then when it develops, you can assign your risk and make sure that you're kind of, you know, positioned appropriately.
So how do you do that? Like how are you assessing? You said is it the quantitative way, back testing all your strategies or?
Yeah. So yeah, this is a painful, like this is me back in the trenches thinking about this. So all of my stuff that I did, I basically have a folder still here with handwritten notes about all of my setups that I took. And I basically got 18 months worth of scribble and like what is now chicken scratch of just, you know, madman scribbles there. And one of the best things that I did was set up a personal Discord server and put everything in there. So use Discord as your journal and begin to get an understanding of your setups by using Discord as kind of like your personal place to just dump all your trades. And it gives you a really nice kind of area to reflect on and, again, start to pull individual cases, start to get an idea of, took 10 trades, won 6 of them, right? You start to build up kind of an impression there, but storing them and keeping them somewhere is very important.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of people have come on and said, and I agree with that. It's like journaling, being able to reflect on your trades, bet sizing, discipline, making sure you're in the game and never taking yourself out of the game by betting too much. I've never been there. And like really having the ammo to fire at these trades, which are the higher, you know, risk profile ones that will create potentially your whole year, really feels like.
Yeah. And I think you're supposed to feel uncomfy. Like, I think you're, you know, when you're talking about these levels of risk, I think, again, it's, you know, I think getting away from kind of just a standard piece of advice. I think if you've got setups that, again, you know, are solid, strong setups, then make sure you're assigning the right kind of risk levels to it. And risk levels is personal, depending on who that is and what they're comfortable with and their own kind of, you know, their own side of things. My 5% may be still over the top for some people. My 5% might be me being a pussy to some people, right? Like it's...
Yeah, well, it's probably not good to go above that.
So you have your technical indicators that like you said, oscillator RSI and just like support and resistance levels. You have back tested those things, or you have essentially a trade journal about what have been your best wins. And then I liked what you said there about like grading each setup, like ABC. Like I've seen traders do that before, even when I was professional. Like they, like you go into risk meetings, for example, and like people would have to grade it. And yeah, trades only really get put on if they got like a high rating across a range of different factors. I think that's a good way of doing it, particularly for swing trading, right? Like it's difficult to do if you're scalping on a daily basis.
But I think swing absolutely.
Let me just interject right here because I was just reading a couple of questions we had from commenters, and it sort of applies to what you're saying. It's like, is this style of trading and what you're doing applicable to a smaller account? A lot of people in the comments want to know how to start, like how to build an account from a small balance and create it into, you know, a larger balance and do that sustainably, which is obviously something tons of people struggle with starting off.
Yeah, that's like one of the, that's kind of one of the most challenging things for newer traders. And I think, unfortunately, well, I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, I think you have to have an understanding of how you're going to grow the account, right? Like, what are you? Are you a technical trader? Are you a scalper? Are you a swing trader? What do you plan to be? What does your time look like? What do your commitments look like, right? So how can you set yourself up in the best possible way to kind of give yourself the environment in order to adopt one of those approaches? Because I always think that especially newer traders try to do too much, right? They want to swing trade, but then they want to scalp, and then they want to, and you kind of become a jack of all trades, master of none scenario. But the other thing, which is the unfortunate aspect, is it's about time. And that's the one thing that you can't teach, is there is no quick fire way to spin an account very quickly. There is for someone like myself that can put aside disposable capital to take a shot at something like that when the conditions are good. But for the majority of people, unfortunately, when you're talking about like sustainable account growth, it comes down to having a realistic expectation of time. Like you can't do this shit in 3 weeks. And although Twitter would lead you to believe that you can, for the majority of people, unless you catch something huge, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a process of discipline and making sure you're not giving back gains and staying at a good performance level when you're operating, when you're trading, like all of those things. So unfortunately, the one aspect to it is time and having realistic expectations. I always give the example to people that, you know, I mentor, and it's like, well, you know, if somebody is offering you a life-changing sum of money, but you have to wait 3 years for it, you're still snatching their hand off to take that offer. But people in the crypto space kind of want everything within kind of, you know, like 6 weeks. It's like, if I don't have it now, I'm a failure. The guys on Twitter are winning, I'm losing. Like it's really a kind of like a rancid environment for the majority of like traders and their psychology.
Yeah, no, I feel like I mean, I've been trading a long time, had a ton of success. And then really like this year or something, I feel like I've fallen into that trope where I'm like, if I slow down, I would have so much more money and like, it's so much easier. But then, you know, I see myself slamming my head against the wall and taking too much risk chasing, and I'm just falling into that trope as well. So it's good to hear some more comments on it.
Seem super chilled, CBS. Like, do you have bad days? You seem like you're a late night radio presenter. Like, I can't even imagine you having a bad day. You seem so calm.
Yeah, no, I have bad days. I have bad days. I always think about this, right? Because I get pretty fucking pissed off and I fall into the same traps. You know, I like tweet threads about, you know, psychology and, you know, best practice and all the things to do. I fall into those traps still. I always think it's like an endless battle that, you know, I can still fall into kind of like the trading addiction route, you know, where I start to like dive into too many things and I need to recognize that. So I still fall into, you know, those kind of, you know, traps. But in general, because I trade now on the higher time frames, I tend to be less bothered by the price movement. I tend to be kind of less pissed off by the intraday stuff. Previously, I'd like pace around the office, I'd back and forth, you know, I'd revenge smack another, you know, 15 contracts short of the Dow, and right, like I would be back and forth. But now, yeah, a lot more relaxed in kind of my approach. And I feel as though, you know, I've got a way of trading, and I try where possible to not do anything unless the conditions are met. Because that frees me up. It makes things easier. I try not to force things. But again, I'm not perfect. I still fall into that trap. So
do you just avoid looking at things on the lower time frames? Like, is that one of the tricks? Like, you don't even look at that stuff? Because
that's another one. That's another trap. So that's so when I trade kind of like the aggressive run up account, so I've done that a few times. One of the things that I feel as though I have, is like I feel as though I've got a bit of an edge when it comes to my background versus the current situation. So for example, one thing that I really like to do is if I see a higher time frame setup that I want to play, then I feel as though I can use the lower time frame to my advantage. So what I can do is I can pre-position for a higher time frame setup using the lower time frame. And by doing that, what I get to do is slam a load more size into it because I get to run tighter stops in general. And then I get to take advantage of the fact that then the account will kind of, you know, run up and play out my higher time frame thesis, but I position down on the 5 minute. A lot of the time, and like the thread that you had up previously, if you get into that like tunnel vision mode, and that's where I hurt myself lower time frame again, is where like I start thinking something's going to happen and I'm like fixated on the lower time frame, and like 24, 48 hours passes and price has done nothing, but I've been like on the edge of my seat thinking breakdown's coming. It's like, it's all going to be over anytime now. You know, I'm going to go to the toilet and by the time I'm back, it's going to be down 6%, you know? And like, I still enter those periods, but the run-up stuff is like, I do it with a purpose. Otherwise, yeah, I try and avoid the lower time frame, but damn, it's so enticing. Like, I feel as though it just calls out to me to just get the drama of like a 5 minute chart zoomed in full screen. Like, you know,
I like what you said though. It's like you have the high time frame stuff, and then you really just add, it allows you to add size or at the start of the trade, and then obviously you take that off when it kind of goes in your favor. I like that. But like, it still allows you to be degen at the start, I guess maybe even at the end of trades, but definitely at the start.
Yeah,
you just need some discipline to do that kind of stuff. Yes. Which seems like CBS has head on his shoulders pretty well now. Was there a time when you didn't have your head on your shoulders so well? We got a lot of questions about your biggest loss. Has there been a time where CBS is on the floor crying, you know, with a bottle of liquor?
No, I'm a super, super boring guy when it comes to that. Honestly, I wish I could tell you like harrowing tales of like where I've just like blown everything and I've been, you know, out on the streets the next day to get my next 10 bucks to trade again. But I've always been relatively comfortable in terms of like the system, the approach, the risk. I've always you know, kind of adhered to that. The times where I lose, it's never that I take a huge loss. I've had nothing really that I've like taken a monumental loss on. I have periods where I lose consistently. So like over a period of time, it doesn't make like a great story, but over time I have losing periods of time where it just feels as though I cannot hit a single thing. And like, that's crypto right now for me. You know, every trade I enter, I entered an ETH trade yesterday and I absolutely top ticked it on the 1 minute long before it just ran down. I was never in profit on that position. Like, and that's been the classic tale of my crypto experience over the last few months, certainly. But yeah, in terms of like individual losses, I've always been relatively disciplined in terms of like what that looks like.
Impressive. Very nice. On the other hand, we have me. That's me right there.
Yeah, well, you can balance each other out, you see. I can be the one that's like really boring and like can't give you any of the detail of like ruining it all. And then we flip to you for the, you know, the nice 6-7 figure losses, and you know.
There we go. We might have to do that sometime. What goes on in the Haven? I know that's your was it a Discord group? Do you guys like share a lot of trading in there or?
Yeah. So again, I won't mention the crypto side of things because members will be fucking furious about the fact that I can't hit anything. But what we do is we're basically an educational platform primarily. So we've got 6 analysts now. with Maine most recently joining us. And so we just produce a ton of content. We produce educational videos, everything kind of around TA, all of our individual styles. We've got people in there that, you know, are price action traders, moving average traders, someone like myself with divergences and momentum. So we basically have just got like an absolute ton of educational content, along with, you know, a very good community of kind of what I like to refer to as mature members, not necessarily in age, but in the way that they conduct themselves, right? It's not like a screaming pump and dump shit show. There's actually like productive conversation that goes on, and kind of a lot of self-help and member help.
That sounds solid for sure.
It sounds like the opposite of Wrecked Radio, if I'm honest.
The opposite of Wrecked Radio. Whoa. Oh man.
All right. So maybe, I mean, what's your views now? Maybe let's have your top trades. You have some big swing trades on that you think are going to play out over the next 3-6 months. Like there's some that you're like, right, this is the trade for the next for my year.
Yeah. So I've been long on the Nasdaq since April. I've caught a very good chunk of the Nasdaq move to the upside. I think, like I said, with the dollar now, we are in make or break scenario. If the dollar fails this range, which is 105.30, I think if the dollar falls back inside that, then I think you just double down on longs and ride it for a year-end rally. And so, as I said, I've been bear posting Twitter, but I'm like, this is close. And I think, you know, the trades for the next 3 months are going to be made over the course of the next, you know, kind of couple of weeks and how the dollar responds here. You've got markets like Tesla, which if the dollar does fail, Tesla looks primed to rip higher. We've got earnings next week as well for Tesla. So I think that you've got kind of on the traditional side of things, you've got a load of markets. AMD is another one that all look primed that can rip a lot higher towards the end of the year. So I think there's a lot of potential juice on that side. And of course, what you've also got is if you get the dollar strength, then you've probably got a better short position than you do in crypto, given what we've already experienced in the weakness of crypto, certainly over the last few days. There's been zero hold up there. So I think even short side, it's probably a more attractive proposition on the traditional side to try and get short if there is a failure of the dollar here. Crypto side of things, honestly, I think the whole market is like, it looks fucked. It genuinely does. And I often say that when it looks as fucked as it does right now, it has to bounce because it just looks so bad that, you know, like it just looks like a one-way trip at the moment. So I think every alt you can basically chart, and it's just rejected higher time frame resistance. It's, you know, basically up against weekly levels. It's failed breakouts. I think pretty much you can just pick anything from, you know, the bag of alts and get short on it if you've got a 3-6 month time horizon. But of course, the thing right now, like I've said before, is surviving in that position until the meat of the move actually plays out, which is the very, very difficult part of the process right now.
Man, that chart does not look good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So long Tesla, long Nasdaq, short alts.
Yeah, so, and long uranium, long the shit out of uranium. That's the other one. That's a monster of a chart. So just get balls deep on everything that's going to be nuclear, war-based, ammunition-based. Yeah, it's like the Michael Burry portfolio, right? Of like his most recent portfolio update, which is like mega short the indexes and long U.S. prisons. Like that's basically the portfolio structure that I feel as though is going to do pretty well over the next like 6 months. So yeah, whatever bleak outlook that paints.
Beauty. Well, I guess we'll hope for the latter with the Santa Claus rally and not the uranium based war trade that you put on.
Everyone's mentioning uranium to me. Like it's I don't know. I've seen so many people say,
"Oh, there's been so many fake uranium bull markets that like throughout the year."
Yeah,
it's a hard thing to catch.
Yeah,
I don't know. It doesn't ever work, but hopefully it never works. Yeah. Right? unless it's like user.
This one's good. Honestly, I would take a look at a uranium chart now. I absolutely agree with you. When I first started tweeting about it, I was like, I get tagged in this shit weekly. Yeah, people right. like uranium's going to break out. That's it. You know, they're like, they're just tagging me in all sorts of shit. Whereas this time we actually have had, you know, a pretty good bout of strength and we're up pretty decently towards, you know, the highs. So it is an interesting market, I think, as we stand currently. But again, it all resides on the dollar. It all is, we're all going to bow to the dollar, I think. So
king dollar, right? Let's get to those closing questions then, and then we got to do these spins for the people since we're back, unless you had one more, Mando.
No, that's it. That's also the question.
All right, the last question that we ask every guest, CBS, and stick with us after you answer it for the loot box spins from Rollbit. We want to know, what's your advice for everyone not to get wrecked?
That's a really good question. What's my advice to everyone not to get wrecked? Do you know, I set the right foundations, right? Like this, when people get success in trading, it's not through luck. It's through hard work and doing something correctly and establishing the right foundations. And so I think for anybody that kind of like is, it's super easy to not spend time doing something productive when you're at the charts and instead just kind of blankly staring at them and then pushing buttons. Like, use your time productively in order to build something, gain knowledge, you know, understand the markets to a better degree in order to perform better in them. Don't just sit there and stare for like the sixth week in a row at a 5-minute chart on BTC and try and press some buttons. Like, use your time productively, because the more you can absorb and put into practice, then the less chance certainly you're going to have of getting wrecked.
Appreciate that, man. Thanks for all the insight. I think everyone had a great time listening to chat and hearing all your insights about trading and the mental side, discipline. It was really good. We got one more code for everybody. It's WESOBACK621. WESOBACK621. And then we're going to get into Rollbit spins here. Hopefully no technical difficulties. CBS, stick around. We give away a loot boxes, three of them, to people in the audience. We bring them up on stage. And I think we'll bring them into the one I'm running, not the video one. But yeah, let's get that rolling. We'll get the Twitter picker. Yeah, I think we've given away like 350K worth via Rollbit. So that's pretty generous of that.
Who is
so
that? Far. Can you read that?
Yeah, I can't really read that.
I'm full screening. Let's draw it.
Here we go.
Wagwan, cuz. Wagwan.
And back in the 1800s.
Well, that
is one. Only two? I think we need one more, just, right?
Just keep that one, the rejected one. The tweet count is whatever. It doesn't deter bots. Back in the 1800s and Wagwan, cuz. Run one more. Please request. Oh, God, we have shit tons of requests. You have to come on stage and say something.
Okay.
You see these people?
No. Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Man, this is so many.
Wagwan, cuz, back in the 1800s. Come on, people. There's just tons of other people clicking. Well,
I don't see either of them.
We might need a better way in the future.
I think we should just do the
notes. Oh, like that. All right, let's see. Let's throw a couple more. Do more than three this time. Just to like fucking, just in case.
Okay.
All right, we'll go this one more draw. We're doing five, and then we'll pick up three, unless one of those other guys comes on.
Okay, so Hot Driver. Oh, no. Hot Driver, Eddie Out. Is that? And Eight. Falcon.
Hot Driver, Eddie Out, Falcon. Hot Driver, Eddie Out, Falcon. Or Wagwan, cuz, or the other person. Jesus. Man, this is not going well today. Oh, there's Wagwan, cuz. We got one.
We got Wagwan, cuz.
Yep. What was the other first one? I am from the 1800s or some shit. Wait, I see Eddie Out. It's whoever gets the shit first. I'm getting, there's one more. If you're too slow on the sticks, you're too slow on the sticks.
Falcon. Hard
driver. Hard driver, Falcon. You see these people? We're gonna find him.
Okay, Eddie out. Oh, did you bring out Eddie? Have you got? Yeah.
I got back in the 1800s. Oh no! Oh my god! I almost clicked the wrong person. All right, we're set. We got the original crew. Sorry to the other crew, you're out, and you know you were never in to begin with. Anyway,
okay. So I only see Wagwan and Claus up on stage, but
yeah, me too. But I clicked the others.
God,
back in the 1800s. I invited you to speak, Eddie out, and I am from the 1800s or whatever.
Oh, there's an error.
You see them.
Seems to be an error adding them. This is shambolic.
Man, we're down bad with this style. Oh, I see Eddie out again. Let's try this again.
I was saying how professional you were before we started. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
This
no,
is this is always. This is like fairground. Like,
yeah, no, I mean.
All right, so we've got two people up on stage.
We're better than this typically. Oh shit.
KBM, why don't you see if you can find the last person. I will do the spins now. Let me just share my screen.
Okay, yeah. Fire off that first spin real quick.
Okay. All right. Can you guys see this that?
One for Wagwan Cause, yeah.
Okay. All right. So this is for Wagwan Cause. Here we go.
The cart driver, one of them?
Oh, fuck me. Nearly won a really expensive Nakamigo. In the end, a sports robot. 1K.
Where's robot? All right. Yo, was Heart Driver one of the people? Can you look that again?
He was.
Okay.
Well, she was. All right. Next go.
Whatever.
This is for Wreck Guy. Someone want a Wreck Guy. 1K.
Who was that for? That was for Eddie out.
Eddie out.
Now we got Heart Driver. All right, fire it up. Man, we're gonna fix this for next week. We gotta get a different way. This is what's floppy. CBS doesn't even think we're professional anymore.
All right, someone wins a Keeper's Returns. So,
all right. Lovely.
Not a big week for prizes. $3,000 of not prizes. Big week. That was the effort to outcome ratio was not as high as we would have loved. But
no, that was... Oh, we're still spinning. What the hell is this, Mando?
Oh, fuck.
What just happened?
Well, I think it won a CryptoPunk, but I don't know where the fuck that went.
But who is that? Like, what was that?
Is that my one?
Did you just click?
My spin?
Wait to check that in the back. I don't think anything was won then.
Personal money? Like, what was that?
No, I accidentally clicked it and it won a CryptoPunk. That's tough.
Did it actually?
Well, the transaction didn't go through. So
I don't know. Just for everyone, pretend that shit just didn't happen. We'll figure that out for next week.
No one won a CryptoPunk. All right.
No one won it because they're not up here. But anyway, it was a good show. Thanks, CBS.
We're gonna
that ending, folks. next time, better prizes hopefully be won, and not 20 minutes trying to figure it out. But yeah, good times, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, man.
Have a good one, guys.